is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We go immediately to the news from Jerusalem, these hours. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will delay the process for discussions on the controversial planned judicial overhaul to the future. The statement said the legislation would be pushed to the next session of Israeli parliament in order to, quote, pass the reform through dialogue. Malcolm, a very good evening to you. I've been watching the big pictures of the protesters. I believe in Tel Aviv, there was some colorful moments where a red line was painted around the Supreme Court. Now it's been the old parlance, kick the can down the road, perhaps to summertime. How is this regarded in terms of Israeli security, Israeli confidence? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Look, it's been a very rough 12 weeks. I think that the demonstrations have been going on since the new government took over and quickly moved to introduce legislation that, contrary to a lot of the reports, would not do away with the Supreme Court, but would try to reform some of the excesses that many people and previous governments, both left and right, had noticed and wanted to enact. In fact, it's very there's very broad support for some actions of reform, but because the Supreme Court has taken over both legislative and the review process, and you don't have the checks and balances. But I think there was a fear that the measures that were introduced were too draconian, and they were rushed through, and this built up a continually escalating resistance that even led yesterday to the defense minister saying that calling for a pause and allowing things to cool off, because he said it was hurting their defense and security position, with many people in the reserves expressing in protests in various ways, including not serving or threatening not to serve. Again, these are minorities, but it's all of these cumulatively built up to a very large turnout in the last few days, hundreds of thousands of people in different cities across the country, and a nationwide strike by the major unions. And Netanyahu went on television and said that he would agree to a pause out of national interest, and the demonstrations, most of them stopped, not all. I think there's a momentum, and the opposition parties see that they had Netanyahu more or less on the ropes and were going to exploit it for as long as possible. We'll have to see now in the interim weeks till the Knesset goes out of session for about 6 weeks. We'll have to see the internal politics within the government, some of the parties that opposed a postponement. But I think everybody in the end came to the conclusion that it was the only approach that could work, and Netanyahu pressed it, and to see what the opposition will do, whether they can come to an accord and present a unified package with backing of a broader constituency of the Knesset than just the government, which could pass it with 60 plus votes. But it's not a unifying measure in that regard.
The U.S. and Israel have a very good working relationship, security and prosperity. At the same time, the U.S. has not been shy to be critical of Israel. You tell me there's a State Department report that is critical. I'm going to use that word. Is that so?
That is so. And it's not exactly a great time. But the point is that it's really based on irrationalities. The section on Israel in the annual report, those country report on human rights practices, includes allegations by anti-Israel organizations that are funded almost exclusively by foreign governments and foreign foundations. And the report then attacks Israel for denying prisoner furlough for Palestinian terrorists and for fighting terrorism and for preventing unrestricted illegal immigration. These are specifically cited as some of the charges against Israel in the State Department report. And it's only one of several actions that have increased attention, certainly the demonstrations, and the fact that the president himself got involved and even last night called for the government to pause this. I mean, we haven't called for Macron to pause his reform of the legislation on pensions when millions of people have been on the street. Maybe some will say it's a reflection of how close we are, but and others of the personal involvements. But in Israel itself, this interference is seen as going too far when it comes to domestic issues as opposed to international issues. And then they brought up that some of the programs that have been proposed were violations of agreements that were signed in 2005 between U.S. and Israel, when in fact the Obama administration and others rejected those agreements and they were not implementing them as well. So there have been a series of these claims and the violations of the agreements, whereas a focus on some of the other things that are happening in the region are not being given sufficient attention.
Let's go to the region, because there's been a strike, a missile strike, I believe, against U.S. presence in northeast Syria, and the U.S. responded against an Iran-backed militia. This is an old enemy who is a new enemy, correct, Malcolm? The Iran-backed militias can be turned on and off at will from Tehran.
Right. And we've seen the Iranians building up their presence in Syria, again, taking advantage of Russia's diversion in Ukraine. We know that they shipped and activated an air defense system in Syria, as well as providing missiles, offering to sell missiles to the Syrian government. But in this case, the U.S. carried out multiple airstrikes against Iranian-backed militias who were blamed for a drone attack that killed an American contractor, wounded another, and hurt five U.S. troops at an Air Force base near Hasaka in northeast Syria. There have been 78 times since the beginning of 2021 when U.S. troops have come under attack, and we only have 900 people there. And plus contractors. The Iran regime has the largest and most capable UAV force, the U.S. said, and they considered a real concern. The raids by the U.S. killed 11 Syrian fighters and pro-government militias, which are Iranian-backed. There was an escalation. The president warned Iran about this and said that they will hold them responsible for the attacks by their proxy groups against U.S. forces in Syria and I guess elsewhere. The interesting thing is to hear the testimony that has come out from officials saying that the advancement of Iran military capacities over the last 4 years, or over, in fact, the last 5 years, to see how the IRGC has advanced and how the sophistication of their weapons and the danger that they pose and the more aggressive actions. I mean, 78 attacks is a serious thing. And then they responded to the U.S. attack with 10 rockets launched at Green Village, which is a U.S. military position about 100 miles south of where the first attack took place. And this is part of a series of these attacks that have been going on. And whether it's a new sign of aggressiveness or confidence or how it relates to the Saudi deal, we will have to see in the future.
Iran is mocking France or warning France or castigating France for how to handle protesters. This is an odd report, Malcolm.
This is the definition of chutzpah, that Iran's foreign minister has urged the French government to observe human rights and avoid violence against citizens who are peacefully protesting the pension reforms. And they call on the French government to respect the rights and avoid resorting to force. This is a government that has killed thousands and thousands of people, arrested tens of thousands, persecuting, publicly executing. And they are and they're mocking the fact that the French and others have expressed concern for the women who were in the demonstration. So Iran saw a chance to strike back, and they are now calling on France to demonstrate restraint in dealing with the demonstrations that have taken place, when in fact the numbers, while serious, 80 people arrested, 123 police officers injured in one day last week. But this is the ultimate definition of chutzpah, that the worst violator of human rights and torture of protesters and violence against them it lectures France about how to treat its protesters.
Malcolm, what do we know of the Iran-Saudi relationship right now?
So, you know, we don't know how much of it is real or not. There is a deal. There's a lot of reasons why they wanted it. The Iranians particularly wanted it because they wanted to stop the attacks by Iran National Television, which is based in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis wanted to restrict the Houthis' attacks backed by Iran, but they seem to be continuing. For Iran, it shows that Iran is willing to engage, and that the efforts to isolate it, and this is a point they repeat all the time, has been broken. And the they're talking about the strategic alliance of Islamic countries. And they believe that this will restrict the West's ability, and especially that of the United States. And then, of course, how it will unite their efforts against the Zionist regime and the Abraham Accords. But it's also trying to impact the bigger issues regarding the JCPOA and surrendering to White House's demands. So they think that the deal with Beijing, with Saudi Arabia, puts them in a much better position. By the way, Iran, China, and Russia are right now engaged in a very extensive naval maneuvers in the northern area of the Persian Gulf, as they call it. And it's one of a number of such joint ventures. I think this is the fourth or fifth that they've been engaged in. And this one is coordinating on combat readiness.
Iran has been condemned by an Islamic council in Iraq, condemning Hamas, which is a way of condemning Iran because Hamas is paid for by Iran. I'm trying to remember, Malcolm, the connection between Hamas and Tehran. Is it close?
Direct. Yes. Yes. Close. PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, is their major beneficiary in Gaza, but they still receive funding, and both from Qatar and support from Russia, from Iran. But this is a very interesting development when the Islamic Fatwa Council, which is senior Sunni and Shiite clerics based in Iraq, in Najaf, put a groundbreaking fatwa, which is a legal ruling and based on Islamic law, against Hamas for oppression of Palestinians in Gaza. And they say they've been promoting engaging in ISIS-like behavior against Muslims and Palestinians alike. And it's a 35-page indictment explaining the ruling. And it's only one of several that we've seen where there's increasing criticism coming about the treatments of people by Hamas, and especially about children. We've seen very disturbing reports coming out about even a Palestinian school backed by the U.S. government celebrated the terrorists who killed seven people at a synagogue, and the radicalization amongst Negev Bedouin who are linked to intermarriage with women from the PA, but most of all kindergarten children in the PA being taught to simulate killing Israeli soldiers and becoming martyrs. And this is in the West Bank, not just in Gaza. So there's we see that the radicalization process continues, and even the Fatwa Council has taken note of it and taken this action, which is highly unusual.
The Houthis are surrogates of the Iran regime. Their weapons are being captured by the Saudis, who pay for the combat. What's the proposal with those weapons?
This is interesting because the United States is looking at sending more than 5,000 assault rifles, 1.5 million rounds of small arms ammunition, anti-tank missiles, and other things that were seized off the coast of Yemen from smugglers working for Iran. This is a violation of the sanctions. So they are talking about sending those things to Ukraine, where, as you know, Russia is getting buying ammunition from Iran, and as well as drones and other equipment. So I think it's a very interesting maneuver by the U.S. to sending a double message both to the Houthis and to Iran.
Also, Iran is responsible for al-Qaeda's proposed new leader. Iran is giving him shelter. This is an old story, Malcolm. Iran was shepherding the first generation of al-Qaeda leaders as well. Has anything ever been done about that sizably, given all of the, what you'd have to say, entreaties to Tehran over several administrations?
Very little done in that regard, but you're absolutely right. This is it's very interesting that the new head of Al-Qaeda is based in Iran. His name is Saif al-Adel. He's wanted by the U.S. in connection with the 1998 bombings of the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. And he's identified now as the de facto and uncontested leader of Al-Qaeda, according to U.N. experts. And the question is Iran going to be the new base? Will they take any kind of action? But the identification, I think, solidifies the relationship. And we know ISIS has become more active in Syria, Iraq, other places, and they use them against Western presence, especially the United States, which is fighting them in Syria and elsewhere.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents. The Dusty One is here. I'm John Batchelor.